Hey everyone, it's Michael. Before we begin, I want to remind you all to join the new Union Sports Goalkeeping Community, a social media network that reimagines how we engage, educate, and entertain one another. To download free, go to www.theunionsports.com or the Union Community on Apple or Google Play stores. Thanks for making the Union possible, and on with the show. Welcome to Inside the 18. I'm Michael Maggett, live from Hollywood, California. With me, you know her as the number one fan of the U.S. women's hockey team, the one and only 99 World Cup winner, Saskia Weber. Omar Zini will be joining us momentarily once he gets back from the auto dealership to get his car fixed. That's a whole story in itself, but that's okay because we're joined once again, making his triumphant return to Inside the 18, the one and only Knott's County FC goalkeeper coach, Tom Wheel. Wheelie, thanks for joining us, man. I'm excited about this.
Yeah, my pleasure. Great to be back on the show. Great to see you and looking forward to the next hour or so of I know I'm going to come up with more questions and answers, as always, but that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And we were talking about it earlier. You know, last time that you were on the show, Saskia, unfortunately, was not able to make it. And we were going to do it this past Monday. And both Saskia and Omar had work stuff that came up into the place. And you're like, you know what? We're not going to make it happen. I need Saskia. I need Omar in order for this to be the true experience. Of
I
being
feel
on
so
Inside
special.
No, that's what it's all about, isn't it? It's just it's so good to get different opinions, different thoughts, different perspectives on everything. I think what we're going to talk about tonight should be really, really interesting for the viewers and the listeners. And you know, there's far more knowledge with the more people we can get around the table. So, and that's what it's all about, isn't it? So no, really, really looking forward to it, guys.
I mean, I love what you just said there in regards to that and having the difference of opinion, because Saskia, this is something that I know you've brought up consistently with people, is that if you're listening to people, if you have like-minded individuals with you all the time, then there's no debate, there's no discussion, there's no growth taking place.
Yeah, and like we always say, goalkeeping is a gray area. You know, there isn't just one way, one philosophy, that's the right philosophy. And so, you know, the good thing about our show and having great people on is that you get different perspectives on everything and can find your own kind of solution within all of that.
Yeah, you know, and I think, you know, Tom, obviously, you know, you're somebody that's very much in regards to the fact of like wanting to learn more than tell people, you know, what you're doing. And I really thank you for that, because, you know, there's a lot of people out there that really appreciate the fact that you like having discussions on social media. You know, you don't like to just show, this is what I'm doing at Knott's County, take it or leave it. I'm not going to listen to why you disagree with me or what you would change or anything like that. So before we kind of get into today's topic anyway, why don't you kind of just kind of fill in everybody a little bit on your journey now, because obviously you're no longer at Norwich where you were working in the academy system, and now you're in a first team environment.
Yeah, that's right. So I got the call from the manager at Notts County kind of around November time. I was actually out in Iceland doing a little study visit out there, working with a great club out there, FC Grotta, with an old friend who works out there, Chris Brazel, and got the phone call while I was out there from the manager at Notts to say that the goalkeeping coach had left for Burton Albion, and would I be interested in having a discussion around taking the role there. And as soon as I started having those discussions and looking into the club and what the role would entail, it became a very, very easy decision for me to get on board. So I started there at the end of November. So still pretty fresh into it, a couple of months down the line, but it's been fantastic. It's been a brilliant experience for me to get into the first team environment with lots of different challenges to what I'd experienced before. And, with some fantastic people, a really big, passionate football club with a great supporter base. And I mean, it's really interesting that kind of everything up to this point in academy football, you kind of get to February time and things start to kind of mellow down a little bit. You know, you've retained your players for next season, you've released your players for next season, you're starting to think about what's going to happen come July. Whereas now it's the business end of the season, you know, everything starts to gain momentum, everything's that increased pressure. And but it is brilliant. I've absolutely loved every second of it so far. And like I say, now into the business end of the season. So we'll see what happens there.
I mean, I think a lot of people don't even recognize that. And Suske, I mean, this is something that you've brought up with younger coaches or younger players or whatever, when they're moving into that professional environment, is that there's a lot of things that go on outside of the game as well, too, that now you have to kind of be mindful of.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're moving up in anything, there's a lot of things going on. But I think you find that just the level of everything you do gets raised, whether it's, we go to video, whether it's watching video, whether it's administrative wise, whether it's everything just takes a different turn for you. And I think the intensity of it as well. But you're brought into that situation because you can handle it and show your worth.
Yeah. I mean, Tom, I will say this right now, you know, obviously there's a lot of people out there that want to be professional coaches. Like that's what their goal is. But I know that you've been somebody that also stresses how important it is that we have quality coaches in the youth environment too, you know, and that don't think that just because you've moved on to a first team role that you don't value the youth environment.
Oh, absolutely not. You know, it was never, you know, I never thought that, if I'm honest, I never thought my next job out of Norwich would be in a first team environment. You know, it wasn't something I was necessarily looking for. It wasn't something I valued as being a more important or a better role than an academy environment. Far from it, in fact. You know, ever since I was 16, 17, I've been coaching in a youth environment and I've seen the kind of the impact that can make and the importance of it. And it was just really, for me, it was just the right move at the right time. But absolutely, I mean, I wouldn't hesitate to go back into an academy environment in the future, because I know the value that it has and the importance that it has at every level, whether that be from a, you know, working with 8-9-year-old goalkeepers at development level to working with 18s and 23s goalkeepers knocking on the door of first team. It's absolutely crucial and something that I think we can all work together at to really kind of demonstrate the benefit of, I think.
Yeah. And I think it's a different type of coaching, you know, across the board when you reach the pro level. And I don't want to say it's maintenance because, you know, but you're working at a different level with a different quality of goalkeeper that, as opposed to bringing up youth, whether it's, you know, the type of coaching you're doing for an 8 or 9 year old, a 16 or 17 year old is totally different than what you're doing at the pro level. And I hate to use the word maintenance, but you're kind of working on refining little things as opposed to training the bigger picture in a sense.
Yeah. And by the way, Tom, feel free to step in anytime. Otherwise, we'll just keep talking the entire time.
But then again, your 8-9-year-olds could probably just use maintenance. I don't know. It's possible.
but I think you brought up a really good point right here, you know, and Tom, it's like it takes a special type of person, a special type of coach to work with that foundational stage, because not only do you have to be a solid goalkeeper coach and understanding the fundamentals of the position, but you also have to be good at working with children.
Absolutely, Mo. You're spot on. And that is a different skill set, you know. And I think that from speaking to be honest, having conversations with ex-players who have gone into coaching after playing, some have stepped straight from playing into first-team roles, which is great. But, you know, especially with outfield coaches as well, a lot have found a huge benefit in dropping down age groups and working with younger players before they then go up to senior level, because coaching as a skill, as an art, as a craft, is something within itself. And you know, if you can develop a relationship and work with a 12, 13 year old, you know, I think you stand in a pretty good stead to be able to do that with someone, you know, of a senior level, because the soft skills that are required to do that with a child, with a player that's going through as much as they are and are in that stage of development is a really big thing. It's not a small thing at all. So I've met some fantastic coaches who are not only great at working with young goalkeepers, but genuinely like ridiculously passionate about it. You know, just really passionate about getting on the grass with young players, young goalkeepers, and developing them and helping them onto the next stage of their journey. And I think that's invaluable. I really do.
I think I just sit back and remember the first time I had to work with little kids. I mean, and I never did. Like when I coached Tony DiCicco's camps, they always let me, I was like 23 and I still got to work with like the 17-year-old kids. And then when I coached club out here, they put me with the junior academy. That's what they called it. They were just really little kids. I can't begin to tell you the anxiety that hour created for me and how much it taught me on like patience and really how to refine my like coaching verbiage and how to kind of not dumb things down, but how to have to explain things at a different level and really break things down. I mean, some of these kids were biting each other, you know, I was looking at the nannies and they were in the corner having coffee. Like, this is your hour and a half. It's not our problem. There's a kid hiding behind a tree. I'm like, oh my God, help me. But I do think that it is invaluable. And as hard as it was for me, it did teach me those lessons of, you know, you can't just, and we've talked about this, Mike, you can't just explain everything the way you would to a pro, or the way you have to be able to curtail your verbiage and your education of youth to a totally different way. Cause they're not going to get it. They're going to look at you and be like, what are you talking about? Like, I don't understand what those terms mean. I don't understand. I can't visualize it. It's a totally different type of coaching.
And I think, go ahead, Tom.
I was just going to say, especially now when you've got a generation which are far more used to instant gratification and instant reward, you know, trying to develop skills within those young people where you're trying to teach them things which take time and take failure and take a lot of questioning and critique to actually get right and for them to understand. And that's not something they're used to. Whereas with guy, you know, I'm 31 now, coaching guys my age and slightly younger, they're maybe a bit more familiar with that process. Whereas a child in their early mid-teens who's starting goalkeeping for the first time, a position which is inherently and traditionally extremely difficult and well critiqued, you know, that's difficult that they're not going to get an answer like that. Yeah. They're not going to get success like that. Yeah. And so if you can work with that young individual and if you can inspire them and motivate them to improve and continue with the position, that's not as easy as it sounds.
No, I agree, because especially with repetition, like, they want instant gratification and it takes repetition and it takes repetition and repetition, and they think they do it right once and okay, let's move on. And you have to be able to talk to the youth and say, no, we have to keep doing this. You know, you're going to keep doing this over and over again because it has to become second nature. And just because you did it right once doesn't mean you're going to do it right tomorrow. And no, we're not going to move on. And it is hard because I think a lot of young coaches out there feel that pressure. And you said this, Mike, that you felt that pressure where I have to move on from this drill. Like, you know, like whether you're doing privates, whatever you're doing. Okay, we've done this drill for like 15 minutes. Okay, but now I have to move on. And you have to be able to be that coach that maybe takes a step back and we're like, well, I'm not moving on to what? They're not getting it.
But I think that comes with that, you know, growing as a coach and being more secure in what you're doing and the values that you have. You know, obviously, you know, at the grassroots level, Tom, you know, you're in a situation where you might have been hired by either the parent or, you know, by a clinic or something like that, and you're, as opposed to with a club where they have a specific vision for an entire year, they're looking at you. We're talking about instant gratification. They're looking at you to get something out of their goalkeepers that day. And now they're looking at you and they're like, dude, they're like, they still can't catch a ball. Like, I don't know what you want me to do. You want me to go on? just because it says it's 2 o'clock and we're supposed to do flighted ball service now. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, they can't even catch yet, so I don't know what to tell you.
But I think that even coaches, some of the coaches that I've worked with in club and stuff, they would come to me like on a Monday after the weekend games and be like, well, this mistake happened, so practice this.
Correct it now.
Correct. And I'm like, well, there's a lot more that goes behind why that mistake happened. Like, you know, and it's not just like, let's replay the mistake and train the mistake over and over again. It's like, what led up to the mistake? What are you doing wrong with your body? Where's your positioning? And everything like that. So they'll look over and see me doing something that's not the mistake and be like, I thought, you know, this is what he did wrong, but this is why he did it wrong. And a lot of parents and young coaches out there, they don't understand that.
Yeah.
That's interesting point, Saskia, because first team level now, you might tend to, you know, I don't necessarily hang my hat on doing this every week, but there might be certain circumstances where something happens on a Saturday and you want to recreate it on a Monday and almost get it out of the goalkeeper system. But it's for a different reason then. I think it's far more, you're not going to fix the problem in a session, but you might psychologically park that kind of moment. Whereas if you're doing it with a grassroots goalkeeper or a young goalkeeper, you're looking at it as part of a far longer journey where you're looking to develop that skill set within that picture. Whereas I think the same thing does happen potentially at first team or at senior level, but it's for a different reason. It's to kind of, you know, this has happened on a Saturday. Right, let's get Monday morning. Let's get out of the way. Let's look at this picture. Let's have a chat about it, but let's get some positive repetition within that picture. Yes. So you can move on with it. You can park it. We've worked on it. Now let's get on with our work. So no, that's an interesting. Here we go.
Hey, there he is.
Hey. This guy. What's up, guys?
How's the car?
It's good. The wheels are good. I want the cheaper option, so it's not great. But, hey, you got to do what you got
to
do.
We still have to understand at some point why you went to a dealer.
No, Toyota. That's where I go.
That's a dealership, dude.
But it's for a service. It's for a service. But today I realized I needed a lot more. My car, all my wheels were, the traction was done. So you went to a dealer
to get tires?
I didn't know I needed tires. They told me I did. So I said, screw
it. Well, they told you did. Okay. Okay. I see how this is.
There's a tire shop on every corner, or you can go to TireRack.com and they're not a sponsor. They'll order them. They're half the price, ship them to you, and then you go to the mechanic on the corner and he'll pop them on for you.
Tom, if you're just wondering how well LAFC pays, Omar has the money to buy tires.
I'm like, whoa.
Tom, it's good to see you again. It's been a long time.
I was thinking. It's almost a year, I think, since we were last on.
Crazy.
Which is mad, which is ridiculous.
Yeah. Time has really moved on. By the way, I don't know if you guys have already talked about this, but your guys' newest video that you posted on YouTube, loved it.
Yeah.
Great. I stole some of your terminology. There was one where the goalkeeper said maybe I could have saved it with my feet, and you said, well, the way you prepped should more or less dictate how you make the save. And you said you prepped low, so maybe you get the hand down, but if you prep a little bit higher, you can get your feet there. And I've used that, like the way you phrased it, I've used it really, really well, and it's been a good discussion builder with the goalkeepers to be like, oh, wait, how was I prepped? And how does that dictate what like save tool that I use? So thank you for that.
No, nice to hear, mate. Good. That's brilliant. Sharon's caring. Look at that. We're loving it, aren't we?
And if you want to see that, guys, you can join the Union Goalkeeping Community where it's free on the Union official page. Just check out this link right there. That's a very simple ad read right there. It's free, guys. There's no ad read. It's free. Tom, before we kind of move on into the topic, and we were stalling a little bit until Omar was able to pedal here in his brand new tires, but we were talking about the youth environment, Omar, just to kind of give you a little bit of a heads up. And Tom, last time you were on, we were talking about behaviors and the way that you have to behave in a youth environment versus now in a first team environment. It's very different, right?
Is it different? Okay. Yeah, it is. There is still some kind of core fundamental things which I kind of hold true in across coaching, but I guess it all kind of, it's an interesting discussion we had. I'm looking forward to getting into it with you guys, because you know, you're kind of weighing up this kind of performance versus development balance that I have now, whereas within youth football or academy football in my previous role, I think it was pretty development heavy. You know, even if you're working with under 23s goalkeepers who are knocking on the door of the first team, you know, their fixture program is within an under 23s league who might get a couple of hundred people watch them if it's a big game in a stadium, but probably not. Now you're talking about playing on a Saturday in front of 12,000. That, you know, that kind of performance versus development argument is a really kind of big one, especially when we talk about kind of what stage are the goalkeepers at. You know, are they a young goalkeeper, an old goalkeeper? What's their previous experience? And I'll just share my screen with you guys, if that's all right, because I've got some
Are you home? Tom, did you just hum?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, sorry, I'm singing.
Oh my God.
It's me. I do it too.
Like, I know, Mike's the only person that I've ever seen. I was like, wait a minute, that didn't sound like Mike.
Can you guys see that? Have you got that?
Yeah, we can see it. Brilliant.
Okay. So this is what I was talking about. We're waiting out, definitely. This is where we're kind of talking about this balancing performance versus development, and in terms of what behaviours we use. So on the right hand side, so currently I now work with three goalkeepers, whereas before in academy football, I was directly responsible for five and indirectly responsible for kind of 16 across the age group. So really big kind of span of goalkeepers from first team to 8 year olds. But primarily every day working with five. Now I work with three. So on the right-hand side, I've kind of made a sliding scale around development and performance where probably at the moment, I would say you've got the goalkeeper, which starts on a Saturday. The kind of the top sliding scale is for him. So, you know, you're really working towards the performance on a Saturday and how you get the best out of them from minute one to 90 on a Saturday. You've then got the second choice goalkeeper who's obviously pushing the first choice, and obviously you want them to perform within training so that they can get in a manager's eye, but there's a reason they're not first choice, therefore we need to develop something, and we can use the time, the fact that they're probably not going to play Saturday, to really push them in certain areas. And then you've got a third choice in my situation, it's a young 20 year old lad who is currently on, we've got him on a part-time loan, so he trains with us during the week, but then plays his matches on a Saturday for someone else. And he's very much in the corner of, you know,
Tom, I have a quick question about that, Tom.
Go on, mate.
What is that relationship with the other club in regards to that, with the other goalkeeper coach, with the understanding that he's training with you throughout the week and working with him in the weekend?
Yeah, it's really fluid. I mean, they train two nights a week, so they train on a Tuesday and a Thursday night and then play on a Saturday, and they do all that. You know, I'm really keen that they, you know, if he's their player, then he's exposed to that environment as much as possible, and we work around that. But equally, it's as important that he takes time with us, and we look after his physical development program, and we challenge him within a first-team environment, which is, you know, without disrespecting the other club, you know, going to be a higher challenge level to him in terms of who he's training with. But it's making it clear to, you know, when the loan is getting signed off, that, you know, this team he's playing for in a promotion race. But for me, I'm setting him challenges on a Saturday where he might get pushed out of his comfort zone a little bit. You know, it's, yes, the game time is important, and the performance is important, but it has to be an extension to training in terms of where he is in his development, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
These sliding scales are pretty fluid. Obviously, they may move for the three goalkeepers up and down. I guess kind of I'm really interested in your guys' thoughts around what I've put on the left-hand side. So what might affect them? So what might affect where you kind of put this development versus performance argument in terms of the form of the goalkeeper, whether the goalkeeper is carrying an injury or prone to injury, their role in the team at the time, you know, first choice, second choice, third choice, their actual genuine ability and the age and stage that they're at, because I think all of those can affect potentially where we go on that sliding scale at any point.
Let's just hand it off to the panel. Saskia, you want to start?
No, Omar, start.
Okay.
I think to Tom's point, I mean, I can kind of like just talk about my situation now. You know, we have a young goalkeeper who we brought in. He's played at Youth World Cups for Mexico. Really good size, and just kind of rewatching some of the footage from the past, and I've realized that the majority of the goals he was conceding were just just small errors in terms of him jumping at the wrong moments. And as we all know, in the Latin American, or especially in Mexico, the way they kind of train things is to kind of be on that front foot to jump or to do an intense prep set to get ready for a shot. And so I think in terms of, you know, the development side now with us, we're really trying to establish certain themes. So for him, it's that jump preset, or on a cross, the ball is getting crossed in as he recovers and retreats to his line. He's doing that trigger jump set as the person's headering the ball. So he's never allowing himself to get set and actually push. So for me, to establish those themes right now, for me, it's about development, about really trying to push those things. So as Tom, like you said, tip the scale more towards the performance. And luckily, we're still in preseason for us here in the U.S. So I'm really doubling down on that performance or the development side of things so that we can get to that, essentially that performance side to really, you know, tip off that meter towards the 5 scale.
Yeah, I'm going to see that there. Thanks, the scale. Yeah, I mean, I think, like Omar said, I think it had, like, where you are in the season has a lot to do with it as well. Like, I'd say, like, in preseason and everything, like, what form did they come in? Did they come in fit? Like, and then what if they didn't come in fit? That really affects the rest of the stages, in a sense. Like, will they get an injury from it? Where does they fall on the scale if the other goalkeepers came in? Where's their team role? How does it affect their ability? So I'd say in a preseason, like, what form did they enter preseason in? If you have to spend all preseason getting them fit, then you got a problem. If they came in fit, then you can focus on, you know, their ability and little points that are off and that you need to work on. And then as you get into season and stuff, what's their team role? Like, where do they fall on the scale and how do they handle that? Because your training changes at that point. At that point, now you're focusing more on the starters or on one and two. And maybe you're talking about the third and where do they fall and how do they handle it? I find on the women's side, I've found that a bit of a challenge. And I'm not saying women are more emotional. I don't need the thing to blow up or anything like that. But I find that has been an issue, and how that player handles it, but that came up during season. So I really think, the scale ebbs and flows as to what point in training and in the season, preseason you're at, and even out of season when you're not with the team.
Yeah. Yo, Tom, if I add on something right here, I want to bring up the fact that sometimes when it comes to, like, you're looking at things like age, and a lot of times people say, oh, he's young or she's young. That doesn't necessarily mean that every 17-year-old is the same. You know, I was just having a conversation with somebody today about a goalkeeper who's taking a first-team role as the number one in a professional environment at 17 years old. And they said that 17-year-old is more mature than a lot of 30-year-olds I know in regards to their performance. So do you sometimes have to kind of fight these stereotypes when someone says, oh, well, someone's 20 versus 33?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll give you a couple of kind of examples from my point of view over my last two roles. So first of all, just back off the back of what you said, Michael, we wanted competition for the first choice goalkeeper at the club. So in January, we signed a lad called Vitislav Jaros from Liverpool, young 20-year-old goalkeeper, under 21, Czech international, been on loan at St. Pat's in Ireland, played 36 games out there, was player of the season out in Ireland. Fantastic. And Liverpool, we were really grateful that we could get the deal done where we brought him in on loan to the end of the season. Now, he's 20 years old. He's played 40 games in the League of Ireland. With the greatest respect to myself, Liverpool aren't sending him to me because they think I'm going to give him better coaching than they are. They probably, you know, I know the guys there and I think they can probably trust me with him, but they're there because they want him to perform on a Saturday so he can go on to a better loan move at 20. So therefore, in terms of where I'm going to put that scale, yes, of course, I want to develop him. But actually, if he's playing games for our football club, we, the player and his loan club, want him to be focused on his performance on a Saturday. Because that's so exactly. We're talking about that for a 20-year-old, whereas actually I work with another 20-year-old where the dial is completely the other end, because he's not had the experience that this lad's had. He's not had a lot of game time. And so we're still almost very, very much focused. So you've got two guys at completely end of the spectrums at the same age. Equally, if I give you the example, when I was at Norwich, and I won't name names, but we had a goalkeeper who the first time we went, when we got promoted into the Premier League a few years ago, we had a goalkeeper who played pretty much every game that season, played very well, had a injury record which wasn't great, where his knees were pretty kind of, you know, he struggled to train fully at full intensity throughout the week, was a big player in the team, international goalkeeper in his mid-30s, kind of early mid-30s. And, you know, when he was playing, his dial was at the top. You know what? I just want to focus on Saturday. I just want everything in terms of repetition. I want my sessions to be confidence building. I want positive repetition. I want to see pictures for Saturday, but I don't really want to work that intensely. I just want to focus on playing well Saturday. He didn't change as a person, but the club bought in the summer we got promoted, a goalkeeper from another league who was there to challenge at the number one, for the number one. You know, he's a big goalkeeper, captain of a Bundesliga team, was a really, really big threat, I guess, from his point of view, for the number one. And him and himself, in terms of how he conducted himself in training, even though he was starting games, his dial went from performance 5 probably to maybe a 3.5.
Yeah.
Because he wanted to make sure that he was still developing and getting better than this other goalkeeper that came in, because he knew he was under severe threat from his game on a Saturday. So without his personality changing, just purely the context and the environment within the club changing ever so slightly, his in terms of where he wanted his training to be differed, if that makes sense, which I thought was really interesting. So
I never even thought about that. That's awesome.
And,
go on, mate.
No, just quick question for you. I think, again, I hope the kid that I'm talking about, we're working together really well, so I hope he's not listening. But the biggest thing I think for him, in my opinion, was that he was given a lot too early. So he was seen as this prodigy playing for Mexico, playing for, you know, the Galaxy Academy here. And everyone saw him as this, you know, 6'4" Hispanic guy who was going to be the next Ochoa, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think he, in my opinion, got too much on the performance side. And was forced on the performance side. And I think his development, in my opinion, was stunted. Not his development, like he still got the experience of playing games, but that development of fine-tuning those little decisions or fine-tuning those little technical proficiencies and execution with that technique at a young age. And I think it's all kind of compounding now, where you see some of the goals that he's conceded and you go, if only somebody had seen this a few years back when he was 16, 17, 18, he wouldn't be dealing with this at 23. So do you think there's like a fine balance where you almost have to protect the players from themselves and the club? We should try and shield them from clubs using them too soon and having them become damaged goods per se.
Well, but can I say something really quick? Not 100%. The dogs agree. But oh my God.
It's a fantastic question, mate, and it's really hard, because when you get that goalkeeper at a young age who just wants to focus on performance, it's hard to argue with them, because you know they are going to get more credibility in minute 1 to 90 on a Saturday in front of fans playing well than they are with you in a training session on a Tuesday morning. So I think if I skip across to this slide, where so a lot of what I do in terms of my behaviours and the way I work kind of looks around the topic of motivation. So for me, this is a theory, self-determination theory by Becky and Ryan. And basically within practice, within the curriculum, your behaviors, your practices and your goal setting, you try and create or try and give some autonomy to the player, so they've got a say in what happens. They see, they can relate to what they're doing, so they can see that it's going to make them better or going to help them, and they've got a competence on what they're doing. And so all those three things together should give them some motivation, which then fosters volition, motivation, and engagement, which should result in hopefully some enhanced performance and persistence and creativity. So that's kind of like a framework that I would use for my behaviors in general. So I guess to answer your question in a really long-winded way, It's trying to help that young goalkeeper at 17, 18, 19, whatever age, understand the process of, I guess, development in terms of, you know, if you are doing a development practice and you are trying to tweak different things with them, even though they're playing on a Saturday and potentially even playing well, you know, at the moment, you playing to your best on this Saturday isn't where you want to be in 5 years' time. Your best right now isn't where you want your best in 5 years' time. Therefore, we're going to have to improve something.
Yeah, exactly.
So therefore, we're going to have to, it's about helping them, I guess. I guess the trick would be to help them understand that the performance of Saturday is almost like a micro setting for your overall goal 5 years down the line, where we hope you will be better. So it's a part of your journey rather than the destination, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Oh, I think
that's a great answer.
Yeah. What I was going to say before the dogs came in is, how much are you setting them up? Like, not that everything can be set up for success. And if I think I know who you're talking about, I don't think it was a successful bring up. It was a rough end of the season and everything. And I think that how much are you actually setting them up? And if it's not successful at that age, what are you doing to help that? Because that becomes that's a mentality thing too. How much have you kind of broken them? In a sense, because with them playing on a Saturday when maybe they weren't 100% ready, like experience-wise and everything, are you identifying that? Are you saying, okay, you know, this is what happened, this is how it was, you know, whether they're dropping down to the next to the second team and everything, then how are you working on boosting them up, not just through training, but mentally dealing with the fact that their first go at it was not successful? And not just jumping over and saying, all right, well, this is how you're going to be. They're 20 years old, you know? So how are you managing that side of things?
On my end of it, it was more so. No, for me, it's just like, I'm trying to speak from experience, more recent experience. And again, the goalkeeper that we got, he is 23. So I haven't had him in those formative years, you know, not 17 to 23. I didn't really have him in that. I've just kind of seen where his career has gone from that early success and that early rise. And so I'm just, again, now I'm dialing back and I'm saying, okay, where in your development did people overlook so that I can step in and try to fill in those spaces? And as Tom, like you said, it's almost like communicating in a way for them to say, look, you know, I'm trying to help you realize that these developments that were overlooked, if we just fix and fine tune little by little, you will get to the macro of where you see yourself becoming and where you see yourself being. So it's finding those ways on a personal level, on a human level, to say, look, unwinding those bad habits will take time and we will fail a ton. However, we don't want to become discouraged and start overlooking the macro, even if the micro is tough.
I think one thing I want to say with this, you know, really quickly, Omar, but I feel like this is becoming like a group therapy session for Omar, right here on the situation that he's been dealing with. But Tom, you know, you brought this up in regards to behaviors when we had you on the podcast about a year ago. The way that you're going to approach for this scenario, me, Omar, and Saskia, is going to be completely different because we've all had completely different prior experiences. Like Omar said, he didn't have this player in the earlier parts of their development. So they've had different experiences than, let's say, maybe another player that he's more familiar with. So, you know, Omar, I think you just need to find, what motivates this guy and what makes him want to get, is his goal to be, you know, the best goalkeeper he can be for Vegas, or is his goal to go to a certain level or whatever? And, you know, everybody's got a different goal. I mean, you know, Tom, I'm sure even you see this at Knott's County. You know, there's goalkeepers there, you know, who want to play in the Prem one day. And then there's goalkeepers there who, you know, they're happy making a living wage. And this is where they want to be right now, 'cause they've got other outside interests.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. I think that, I'll tell you what, I'm just thinking out loud here. I'll tell you what we can do is that I thought about doing this anyway. Shall we just have a look at...
Sure.
Where's my thing?
That's cool.
We go in here.
Okay.
That's the famous session. Anybody who's watching or listening to this, go watch this. The progressions, Tom, class, the coaching points, amazing. So go watch it, guys, please.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. I'd be really interested to hear you... well, firstly, hear your guys' views on a couple of things. And secondly, just look at this through the lens of behavior, because hopefully what I can do with this visual example is give some context behind the three lads and potentially why the different behaviors are being used. Just, again, to give some context, this is 3 days before the game. So this is what I would say is a learning day. Every day is a learning day, but this is really one where we can get into some nitty gritty conversation. We can chat about the picture. We can set the challenge quite high. I've probably been here at this point 2 months, maybe eight to 10 weeks, I'd say. So still very much developing relationships with everyone. I'm just going to run a little bit of it because I'm interested to hear your thoughts behind some of the things that I say and my language, and because there's some bits I'd be really interested to hear your thoughts on. There is a young goalkeeper who, if you watch the video, is the one that I probably go into most depth with in terms of coaching points, let's say, and challenge. There's one where he actually comes back at me and says, this is impossible. I can't do this. This is impossible. And I won't lie, it caught me completely off guard at the time. I'm thinking, man, there's a camera crew here. Like, why are you calling me out in front of everyone here? What about this session? You can't say it's impossible. But, here we go, mate. Yeah, it's within this practice.
Oh, is this right here? Okay.
It's within this practice. Yeah.
Well, you got two strikers to aim for. You can stick it across the six or you can stick it into here. Don't mind. These two, you have to scan for their movement, okay? So I'm going to play ball back to Sam. Either of you two can press him, okay? Obviously, if you press him, he's got less time. You press him, you've got more time, okay? You don't have to press him if you want to. If both of you are like, flagging a little bit, don't press him, just relax, okay? He'll play out. These two will combine and they're going to cross from that channel for you two to go in for one-touch finishes, okay? I'll then set the goalkeeper on the outside who will shoot. Feel free then to try and get little flicks across the line, go on second phases, whatever you want. But I want you to try and score, okay? Nice, T. Nice. Finish. There. Hit. Save, Sam Slocum. Well done. Good. Great choice, Sam. Yes. There you go, V. Offside. Interfering with play, Lewis Knight. You know it. Ready.
I like the play-by-play too.
Good touch. Love that. Working the goal. Good.
Oh.
Brutal.
Tom, it's impossible, man.
There it is.
It's impossible? I don't think it's impossible, mate. The position's hard, T. Choice.
Keep it going.
This is the youngster. Yeah, this is the youngster, right?
Good. Yeah, it, yeah. Yes, you. Brilliant. There you go. Halton and Brooks.
Okay. Just give it a pause there, Omar. Appreciate that. So first of all, guys, what are your thoughts on that? I know obviously there's a lot of context you're missing, but what do you think about that scenario?
I love the scenario. I love the how in tight the reaction is. And no, it wasn't impossible. And it wasn't. But you could see after he didn't come and make that first save, whether it was a block, whatever he wanted to do it, he had given up on the second one and got beat near post. And that's when he stood up and said, it's impossible. And I didn't think it was. I thought that you didn't play the first goal right, and then you bowed out. So then that becomes a different conversation per goalkeeper, because then the younger one comes across, makes a good kick save and everything. And then two before that, same thing, good double save and stuff. So it's not impossible, but everybody's going to get in their head differently about it.
Yeah, and I think personally, when somebody says something like that, and I've done that before myself too, playing as well too, is they're basically, essentially, they're trying to convince themselves. They're giving justification on why they can't be successful in the action. In my opinion, and as a coach, you have to recognize that this is a red flag right here. This means that this goalkeeper already internally has given up in this moment, and they're justifying to them why it's okay for them to give up this moment. It's a very difficult action, for sure.
Oh, they, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, yeah. I think there were two bits. So first of all, it's obviously it's an kind of undefended first, you know, ball across the goal, two strikers swimming onto it. And then the second one, I've asked them to kind of run across the line of the strike as if, you know, the ball's been cleared and people are leaving the box. And that, so, you know, their vision's impaired. I think that's what he was kind of getting a little bit frustrated about. Now, my point being that with that moment in that time in the environment he was in, for him at his stage and where he's at, I'm not saying I want you to let him suffer. My big thing with him is I need you to be resilient and I need you to learn off real pictures. And I need you to go forward. If that's the goal, that's the reason that we can do that thing on a Tuesday or a Wednesday, so we've got lots of time until we play any kind of games, we can have that critical discussion. We can you know, really kind of get into some good discussion. And again, if that was the goalkeeper that's starting Saturday, who's 33 years old and has played 200 league games, I might react slightly differently to the way I did with the 20-year-old who probably hasn't been exposed too much to that type of practice or that challenge. But at the time, my rationale behind it was, I don't think it's impossible and I want to see what your resilience is like in the next set. And we'll see how you get on. And that's why I make the comment of it's the most satisfying set of the morning, because you got your head switched back on, you thought about the problem, and you made two really good actions off the back of it. So I think kind of originally about 2 hours ago, we asked the question about kind of behaviours. And kind of my point being that I just wanted to use that example. I mean, if you get time to go and watch the video again, or if you haven't watched it, look at it through the lens of my behaviours. Because I've looked at it back and kind of analysed myself. And I'd like to think if I look at the three lads, I'm quite deliberate in how I act, if I praise what I praise, and if I challenge how I challenge. Right. Because there are different goals for each of the three goalkeepers within the session, different objectives, and they're all different people at different stages. So therefore, there's going to be a way that I act that's different between the...
It's not me.
No, I know it's not you. It's Omar. I think it's the vacuum cleaner's going or something like that. The dustbuster or something like that.
Yeah, it's going off in the back here. Thomas says it. My two cents too. I think also the fact that you didn't stop the entire session to address it. I think you made him. Like you said, you created that ability for him to be, or you set the stage up for him to become resilient versus you. Like with a crying kid, right? We say, let them figure it out. You don't want to step in and comfort them because they'll always feel like you're going to be there. So I think that was really good on your end to kind of go in stride with it. But as you said, with a little bit of an older goalkeeper, maybe you have more of a conversation and say, hey, look, you know, hey, how can we make this more realistic for you? I think that would probably make more sense. But yeah, like you said, you have to be fluid as a coach with different personalities, different age groups, different parts of the development, because you just have to feed different information based on where they are in their career.
Well, you have to. How many times have we been in those situations where you're doing that drill and that you have one keeper that's just getting frustrated and the ball keeps going in, and then others are doing it well, or maybe making some saves, but maybe still not making the right decisions in a sense of positioning or something. And there are different ways to handle everybody. And I agree with the fact, like, you know, especially with the older, you know, give them the second to figure it out. You know, it's not impossible. Let's keep going. You know, and then those two saves in a row that they do end up making, they're just like, sweet, I got it. You know, and it changes that whole psyche and that mentality, giving them that chance.
I have a question, Tom, and I want to pull. Where's the dialogue, the diagram or whatever? Is that still up here?
The PowerPoint?
Yeah, the PowerPoint. Yeah.
Also, one last thing, Tom. I think also too, when you look at older goalkeepers throughout their career, they've had a coach. They've said the exact same thing as the younger goalkeeper has just said. And they've had a coach do exactly what you did, figure it out pretty much without saying figure it out. It's just kind of how you responded. So I think the older goalkeepers as well, when we step into environments like that, we always tell them, hey, if you have opportunities to coach the younger goalkeper through your experiences, through shared experiences.
I was literally about to say that. I was going to say, what is the role of Sam? What is the role of Sam in this situation with T?
Brilliant. That's a fantastic
point. That's a
great
point. Yeah.
It really is. And to be honest, like, my biggest question...
I mean, you stole it from me, Omar. I was about to say it. That's why I wanted the friggin' PowerPoint. But, you know, whatever.
My biggest question to myself some days when I walk off the grass is, has the goalkeepers done more coaching than I have? Like, because sometimes, but then I also think that in some ways, in a lot of ways, that's kind of what I want to do. That's the environment I want to create.
Absolutely.
I want to create practices which it kind of provoke that conversation and that shared learning between them. So if I always think that if I'm kind of making myself redundant, I'm doing the right thing.
Absolutely.
My job is to create an environment and create a practice structure which allows for those real world problems that they can work out together. And you know, I'm not naive or egotistical enough to think that I know more about how to deal with that picture than Sam at 33 years old, who's played hundreds of league games. And also, I'm not stupid enough to realize that, I guess naive enough to maximize the fact that Sam has had a 3-year relationship with T and I've had a 2-month relationship with T. So in terms of his personality type, am I better off leaving that bit of learning to Sam and I'm going to consolidate that later or have a discussion later and reinforce it or challenge it or whatever, as long as the goalkeepers aren't and I'm very aware of the conversations that are going on, you know, but as long as they're not completely contradicting what I'm saying, and hopefully, and what is happening 99% of the time is that they're challenging and reinforcing the points I'm being made or having discussions around the process or the structure of the learning, then great. Then brilliant. Yeah. Then let them crack on. That's fantastic. Like, you know, it does become a real kind of mind twister at times where you're walking off and go, well, they've spent more time correcting and debating than I have challenging. But I think that's surely in my eyes a really positive thing. But the stereotypical role of the coach is to correct and to advise and to direct and to this, that, and the other. Whereas probably what you see me do within that session a lot of the time is to praise, is to hustle, is to set out access and structure, as opposed to getting to the real nitty gritty. And also, just to hijack on that point, sorry, to finish off, the role that the senior goalkeeper has with the younger goalkeeper is what we've just talked about. The fact that I can step in potentially with a little bit more stability, let's say, within the group with the younger goalkeeper and talk about, if you look at the video, there's a couple of bits where I'm talking to the younger goalkeeper about this, that, and the other, and you see the other two kind of looking over and earwigging and having a listen.
It's fine, set of the morning, that.
Yeah. And that's through different environments thought that's a really kind of effective way of coaching, rather than going directly into the older senior goalkeeper and going, you need to do this, 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 and this. Actually work with one of the others who might be a little bit more receptive or is at that development stage. And they're kind of looking over going, oh, I like the idea of that. I think that's pretty good. I'll have a go at that, without actually challenging them directly and all, trying almost denting an ego or, you know, potentially putting them on the defensive. But your coaching points are kind of transparent throughout the group, and then they can kind of pick up different bits from different conversations. That makes sense.
Yeah.
By the way, wonderful interview as well too, Tom. Not just the wonderful session in this mic'd up right here, but the interview was really gave a lot of context to it. Anyway, I don't think that actually was completely off the topic. I don't know where my mind went to a weird tangent right now. Anyway, I do want to ask this right here, and we can even pause this for a second right here, Tom. You brought up a really good thing in regards to everybody's journey, their different places, and how they can all help each other because they've known each other at different points in time. Now you got a situation where you've got Sam, has been there for a long time, T, who's come up through the club and is going on loan, and then you got V, who just got to the club. And now, how do you integrate this goalkeeper into that environment and how to make it the most productive for them? Because, you know, we had this conversation before the show started in regards to what is expected of you with this goalkeeper. Does Liverpool want you to retrain this goalkeeper, quote unquote? Do they want you just to maintain this goalkeeper? They just want you to not do anything and just let them have games, you know? So how do you have, is this a conversation you have with him on what do you want, what does the club want, or is it more important, or is it kind of a combination of the two?
Yeah, it's definitely a combination. I think just to use some slides as a bit of a to support, really. I mean, any goalkeeper that's going to play for our club has to be this. So, you know, obviously we think about, we're very obviously kind of thoughtful about the type of goalkeeper that we bring in terms of, you know, recruiting them to a style of play and with a skill set that we're doing on a weekly basis. So I think that we wouldn't necessarily be looking for a goalkeeper who wants to come in but doesn't want to improve. So that was a big thing with Veet, that he, you know, wanted to develop himself. He wanted to push himself. He wanted to, you know, work on certain areas of his game around his kind of game schedule. Again, the big thing for me is that even though we've only got a short amount of time with Veet, potentially 6 months or so, what I have to do first is develop that relationship that's going to act as a foundation for us to kind of go on a little bit of a learning journey together. And obviously, as games come and go and performances happen, then we get more stuff, we get more context, we more things to talk about. But ultimately, everything that we do from a learning point of view will get based around these things that are on the screen. And I think another thing that kind of helps the current situation is that, personally, I think that the way that I try to work with a very kind of clear structure about A, what we're trying to achieve, so what's on the screen at the moment, and B, how we're going to achieve it. So if we go, I think I showed you guys this one last time. It's when I texted you earlier, Michael, about, you know, to retrain or not to retrain. What are we looking to affect or to change? I think kind of using this model that I kind of work with for a significant period of time now, it gives them a bit of a, rather than saying, you know, V coming in and going, oh, I want to get better at V. Oh, this is what happened. You know, he came in and said, you know, an area of focus I really like is to look at my reactive shot stopping. And I went, okay, well, what part of it? You know, what do you mean? I said, well, what part of reactive shot stopping? There's a lot of reactive shot stopping is a hell of a big topic, mate. Like, what are we actually working on? And, you know, showed him this. And I think that it gives the lads in general, and it gave him a real sense of direction about what part of the topic and the pictures we're actually going to hone in on and look at, because we could do it, you know. So the session that we just watched is obviously a reactive shot stopping type session, but my focus within that was mainly about the assessment of triggers and cues, so which can affect their position. Was basically it. So what do you see? And then do you really, just from that, do you decide to defend the goal, or do you decide to engage the ball and defend the space? That was it, really. And then we kind of got on some other conversations about solutions. But to answer your question, I think that for him to, he wants to improve, which is why one of the reasons we brought him in, and to give him a platform to really see some kind of deliberate progression. And we have to kind of understand what before we kind of work on how, and then we look to measure where we've gone with that journey. And so I think that's really important for him coming in on loan, was to kind of really look at not just what we're going to get better at it, what we're going to get better at, really which part of that, and then we can look at the how. So I don't know if that makes any sense, but in terms of getting the buy-in from him, to improve, because you're absolutely spot on. You know, some goalkeepers will want to go out alone and just play Saturday, 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 Saturday.
Right. Yeah.
And that's it. But the way that we train and the way that we work, because I'm probably more of a development coach, I would say, it's going to be hard for you to engage in training without buying into the way we do it. And so even though it's interesting, Omar, that one of the first things you picked up was one of the bits of language. And that's one of the first things I had a conversation with him about, actually, was the type of language that I'll use in terms of the thing that's on the screen now, in terms of prepping and those different words that might mean different things to different people, and actually give a direct, this means this. When I talk about this, it means this. If you've got any questions, then bring it up straight away. Don't go in the dark for a day, a week, where you're not sure what I'm talking about. And then that once we've had that shared understanding, I think then we can look to really get some learning underway and push forward.
I love what you were just saying right there, Tom. And I know, Suski, I know you need to take off in a couple minutes right now. So I don't know if there's anything you want to add on before you have to head out.
No, I'm just listening. I'm like, anybody that can talk longer than Omar but keep me interested is all right with me.
Oh my gosh.
That is I know. Waffle for fun, me. I'm sorry.
No, I love it.
Did you were you putting this back up, Tom? I was looking.
No, that's fine. No, that's
okay. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
It's funny one thing that you just said right there, Tom, and that is the simple fact of like having that conversation when the new player comes into the club about what my language is. Something I've never even thought about before is that you're coming into a new environment, and everyone knows the terminology, but they might not, because again, every club uses language differently. What, like you said, press on might mean 17 different things in 17 different clubs, you know, depending on who you're with or whatever. And then asking them how they feel about that.
But it's not just that, Mike. It's also just the way you speak to them in general, like not just the terminology on the field in the practice, but it's the way that you address them. Like they might be used to, you know, I've coached players that they're used to like belligerent coaches, like, you know, when they make a mistake and stopping the practice, like Omar said, and stuff like that. And you, and like, you know, coming in to be coached by me, you're not going to get that. And, you know, you get some, you know, young kids or you get kids that come in, I'll talk about college keepers, you get college keepers come in and they're like, this is only kind of feedback I've ever had. And I'm not that kind of a coach. Like, you know, I'm the kind of coach that, you know, we'll discuss it and I'm more even keeled and everything like that. So, you know, it takes a little while and they have to be integrated into your style as well, not just your terminology.
Can I just jump in? Because that's a brilliant point, because I had that 2 weeks in where I had a little debrief with all the lads 2 weeks in and said, how are you finding it? You know, what, you know, is there anything that you're not enjoying? You know, anything that you don't understand, anything you'd want to change in terms of the week? How do you find me? And they said, well, to be honest, like it's really good. We're really enjoying it. Quite intense. And I went, what do you mean intense? And they said, well, you, we think you know, you're quite intense. And I was like, I think I'm quite laid back. I don't think I'm but it was because of what they'd experienced beforehand was quite a laid back type of session. It was, you know, I think 15, 20 minutes of, you know, one touch, two touch games, you know, just kind of all a bit.
Right.
Not laughy jokey, but just a little bit kind of lighthearted. And then it will be very positive. And I've gone in and I'm going, right, we're getting better at this. This is how we do it. This is a language you're using. Boom, 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 boom. And it was just a little bit of a culture shock. And I'd never thought about it. I never thought I was intense. Like, I love what I do. I'm really passionate about what I do. But I came across really intense. And so that was the big, that's a fantastic point you make, because
some people take intensity as maybe negativity. You have to have those conversations. Like, is he so intense because I'm doing it wrong? I'm doing it wrong. He's not getting it out of me. But it's just a different coaching style. Like you said, you have some coaches that are like, all right, you know, you're doing your volleys, you're doing this, you're doing that, you're doing that. Then you go into this, you go into that. And so it's just finding that understanding. You know, you're not doing anything wrong. This is just, you know, we're gonna hit it. We're gonna go after it. But you have to have those open conversations so that, because everybody gets in their head, you know.
But I think one thing is that's difficult with all this, Saskia. You know, and to interject right here is that if they wanted you to be like the past coach, then that's not gonna be it's not gonna be authentic.
And if they're sent to you, and they're used to that, you know. It's not that they want you to be like the past coach. I think it's more that that's all they know, or that's what they've known. And so they get used to it. And so everybody has a different style. Everybody has a different way of teaching, and they have to adapt and understand. But the only way to get that is like have the discussion. I'm glad you pulled the guys aside and you're like, okay, how are you guys feeling 2 weeks in? Like, let's talk. You know?
Yeah. I want to bring something up right here, Tom, if you're comfortable with it or whatever. I want to bring up some clips of V playing recently for you. You know, after coming in on the loan. Let's see.
Before you do the clips, I'm going to jump. Tom, you're awesome.
Absolutely. Great to speak to you.
Absolutely.
Real quick, Mike, before we move on to that. Just, I think also, and I'm sure you can agree to this thought, everybody can, I hope. You can't rush trust. And I think that's where I've had to check myself. You know, I had the trust with the guys that I had last year. Obviously, the new guys are coming in. And then I was working with the first team for the first 3 weeks, and then now still assisting with the first team. And they brought in pretty much an entirely new set of goalkeepers, the starting goalkeeper, the second goalkeeper, and the third one was, you know, from last year as well. And just having those conversations of with myself of like, hey, you took it took you a while to build this trust with these guys. And if they don't understand that your coaching points are coming from a point of you're just trying hard to help them improve, eventually it'll come to light. So just be patient with everything, whether it's film, whether it's, you know, having a backroom conversation at, you know, at lunch with, you know, with a guy just sitting down for 5 minutes and chatting about his life. Those are the things where you start building trust, and eventually they start recognizing that your points are going to come across more as you're trying to really improve them and continue and push them on their development versus, hey, I'm just trying to critique you and show you my ego and show you who I am. Yeah. So again, that's, I kind of just wanted to say that last thing is I feel like myself and I think other coaches, whenever you step into a new environment and you know, a first team environment per se, your ego goes, I need to prove to them why I'm here versus let's have a collaborative effort here to both get us where we need to go.
Absolutely. Omar, can I ask you a question? Can I ask you a question real quick about that, Omar?
Sure, sure.
Has that changed for you as you've moved into higher levels?
And been
exposed to higher levels, and from a coaching standpoint.
I mean, I think this one was the. I mean, I'm still kind of in it, but I'm obviously growing closer and closer to the goalkeepers that are there. But yeah, it's definitely tough. You step into an environment and a lot of these guys are distinguished. Like the goalkeeper we brought in, Maxime Crepeau, we bought him for a good amount of money. So he comes with a big price tag and he comes with, you know, he's a great guy, but he comes with this persona that you go, okay, he's seen a few things with Canada. He's seen a few things at the highest level in MLS. So those are the things that mentally you kind of like, you wage war with yourself of like, okay, well, this is who he is. Let me show him who I am. And then you kind of have those conversations in training. Like this past week, they were doing a transition where it was like, you know, one side of the goal to the other. And it was 2v3 at times. Then you get pulled out from one side. They squared across. And there was one moment where he overshifted and they shot far post. And, you know, he hadn't played for a little bit, but he comes off to the side and he was like, what'd you think there? I said, you overshifted. You overcorrected. I think you got a little, you know, you got too close to the near post and that far side and you couldn't really push off. He's like, yeah. I thought so too. Thanks. And it's just like those mini conversations where you just kind of go, you never know when they're going to call on you to ask you things, but you need to be ready and stand by what you're saying. So you always got to be locked in. And eventually over time they go, oh, this person has some good things to say. And in my opinion, that's how you prove who you are as a coach versus on the day-to-day you're trying to show them. It's just naturally over time it happens. So I'm getting more patient with myself, Mike, to answer your question, more patient with, I know why I'm here. Don't make it more than it is. And then eventually, as I've always done, things will come to light. Just be patient.
Absolutely, mate. I think that the big thing that you said, just to add on, if you walk into a new environment and try to correct things before you've seen anything, I think you lose credibility before you even start, because people will go, well, you don't know what I'm about. You don't, why are you working? Why are you trying to make me into your model of what you think is right without understanding me or knowing me? So one of the biggest things that I learn is when you go into a new environment, you do nothing. You just look, you just watch and you listen and you speak and you learn and you get a real understanding. And I think that actually not only do you end up making better decisions from that, but you also gain respect from people because they actually feel like you're trying to understand them before you try and coach them. And that's massive. And then just going back to your kind of eureka moment that you spoke about, I had one with Sam, which was massive for me. It will be one of my best moments in coaching till I finish, whenever that might be. And it was a really simple practice. Sam has always been someone who has defended the goal pretty resolutely, never really wanted to engage the ball, has been a reactive shot stopper pretty much his whole career. And we were doing a practice and the ball got slid through on the angle and he decided to literally go from his position, which he's been really comfortable with, stepped a yard down the line to reduce the reaction time, made a foot save, which wasn't very pretty, wasn't very nice, but made a save and genuinely celebrated. Like, acted like he'd scored a goal. Like, yeah. And I spoke to him, I said, what was that about? I never looked to attack the line of the ball, never. And you've been speaking about it and I've seen some bits that you've put on and I just tried it and I was really, and I, you know what, I just made the save and I was so kind of happy that I tried it and it worked and I felt comfortable and I felt in control. And I was like, wow, because God, I don't know how long that had been brewing in his head that was something he maybe needed to try or needed to do. And And, you know, there was a whole lot of stuff under the surface to that moment. And then to get that kind of overriding emotion that he'd made a pretty simple save through a decision-making process that he'd maybe not done before. And then from then on, I thought you look at that going, I'm kind of in here. We can work off this. But no, great points, mate. Great examples.
Yeah. I think, sorry, Mike, just one last point. Building off your story there, Tom, I think again, like you said, everyone's had their own experience as a player. So as much as our personality as coaches, we need to trust that eventually they'll see our objective as coaches is to help them develop.
Yeah.
We have to also see it from their perspective as well. Like, we need to understand, like, their personality with a new coach will eventually come to light. We just need to give them the opportunities to do that. So like you said, had you gone about it differently and said, hey, I'm telling you to attack the line, you need to do this, versus just passively continue to say it when it comes up. And then eventually on his own path, on his own mission as a goalkeeper, his development, he'll try it and he'll have that eureka moment. So I think sometimes the best action is no action. And the best time to say things is probably the best time not to say things.
Spot on.
You know, so I want to pull up this clip if that's cool. Let's see here, right here. All right, cool. So let's go here. Video files here. Dun, 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 dun. See, now I'm humming. all right, so I'm going to. So here, let's should we play through all the way first stuff? So this is against Grimsby. Okay, so this is against Grimsby Town. Balls from about like, what, 35 out or so, near the sideline right here. It's just a free kick, comes inside, driven to the back post. V goes up for it. Colt keeps balance, recovery, boom, and hold right there. Okay,
Mike, just play it again with the full audio, just because people who are listening, okay, they're better for them to hear.
Okay. Well, they heard all that cheering, so that's great play-by-play by the commentator right there. Walk us through the situation, Tom. Obviously, this is one of his first games.
Yeah, it's one of his first actions as well. Yeah, it's early on in the game.
Okay. So, go ahead.
No, so it's just a deep free kick. In our league, the way that we play, we play quite a possession-based style of football. A lot of teams that we will come up against will try and maximize these kind of situations where they can put a ball into the box. And so one of the big things that we talk about is trying to, really be quite a key influence in these pictures and looking to defend the space. So V is obviously seeing that it's a ball, it's a driven ball to the back post. So the flight is fairly consistent. He thinks it's something he can come and deal with. Eyes on the ball the whole way. The defender gives a nice little block to the attacker, which is something we've spoken about as a unit as well, where if the goalkeeper does want to come and get involved, your job as defenders is just to deal with other players round. Obviously, lands a little bit funny on that player, I think, which knocks the ball out. But then his initial reaction, obviously his first reaction, is to try and regain possession of the ball, which he does. And that it was a really, really important action for him, because not only obviously was it a good action within this phase, but it was one kind of in his first game early on in his, you know, it's his first game for the club in front of the Kop End. I think there's 10,500 at the game. It gave an indication to the team, to everyone, that these are situations where he can be effective in. And yeah, you know, he spills the ball, he recovers the ball, but just purely the intent and the process behind an action is a really, really positive one. It's one where he's assessed the flight of the ball. He's in a position, you know, in terms of the way it's struck, where it's struck from. He thinks that the ball's got to travel far enough in that solid trajectory that it's got, that it's one that he can affect. His position is one where he can, you know, go and affect the ball. He doesn't drop off or into his goal too early. He holds his position. His movement is he stays square to the ball, but stays relatively balanced when he moves and is able to lift off that position. And then he decides to catch, which for me is the right solution. So if we go down that process, we've got a lot of ticks going on. So we thought that was a fairly positive action for him.
I want to say this right here, Tom, with this, because I wanted to kind of point out more the fact that it's one of his first actions, the behavior after the fact is really something that I want a lot of people to watch here. First off, right here, his first, right here, boom.
Yeah.
that's teammate. That's somebody right there who's a leader. That person also recognized the work that somebody else put in to making a play and a play effective. Second thing he does, looks and scans to see what's the best available action in the moment, as opposed to adrenaline going, I spilled the ball, focused on that. That's a different type of 20-year-old than a 20-year-old who, you know, I don't want to use, you know, T as an example or whatever, but a 20-year-old with less experience at the highest of levels.
Yeah.
They've seen more. And so you're going to see any actions here. Omar, I don't know if there's anything you want to add on to that, but.
No, I think both you guys have said enough.
Okay. All right, cool. So we'll kick off of that. So Tom, I have a question for you though. So what is that conversation like with a goalkeeper like that after that game, as opposed to a goalkeeper that has been with the club for a long time? Is it different? Is it the same?
Yeah, it's different, definitely, because, you know, he's, especially within the context, you know, it's different because it's his first game. I think we went on an unbeaten run. Before he came in, we were unbeaten in six, or we'd won six in a row. We then drawn a game and lost a game narrowly, 1-0. So we were in a fairly decent run of form. And Grimsby were just below us in the table, you know, 10,500 there, big game for the club. And obviously he's come in, he's had his season in Ireland, he's had a break, and then he's come back in with us. And he's, you know, his overriding emotion after that game is disappointment. You know, we've lost the game. It was a big game for him. The two goals were not directly his fault, but there were certainly things that we could talk about within them. And also, you know, there's another goalkeeper at the club in Sam who had been playing and playing consistently and playing pretty well. So there was, you know, direct competition. And I think when we were reviewing that game, and I spoke to him, you know, in the evening on the phone, in fact, and just said, look, there's a lot of positives to take out of the game. And, you know, dissecting moments like the cross he took, like there's a couple of bits of distribution where it's really, really important to focus on the positives of that performance in your first game for the team, that the kind of body language you showed in certain moments. And again, almost look at it as a micro point within a macro journey. And, you know, where does this leave us? What does next week look like? What does the week after look like? What are the things we could address in, or that we could kind of focus on within the next game? And that's definitely, you know, in terms of my relationship with him, his relationship with the club, it has to be different. That conversation has to be different from if I was doing it with another goalkeeper who played 20 more games, because the learning journey is of a different length. So, you know, it's still very much from my point of view with him looking at, okay, we're at the start of the learning journey. I'm still building a relationship with him. He's still getting to grips with me and the club and all the rest of it. And, you know, if we come down hard on a game that we lose, I don't think I actually know him well enough to know what kind of reaction is, what behaviours from me are going to result in a positive or a negative. So therefore, I'd be pretty naive to put my money on one and go, I'm going to overpraise, I'm going to overcritique, because I've known the lad a week and a half. I don't know how he's going to react to it. So it's very important for me to kind of almost put a couple of feelers out within that time and see how he reacts to different things before we establish the best way of kind of behaving within that relationship moving forward.
I love what you just said right there. I'm so glad you heard that, because I want so many young coaches, and Omar, and I'm sure you agree with that, having young coaches hear that, because I know personally, and Omar, I don't know if you've made this mistake in the past or whatever, is that with a goalkeeper that you're not as familiar with, that a newer environment, maybe you're trying to impress them, maybe you're trying to impress the club that you can handle these types of situations, you approach it in a manner that actually negatively affects the relationship with them moving forward.
Yeah, no, I agree. Again, I mean, sometimes you ask me these questions and I feel like you answer them. So
I think I should just let you you answer them. I start going off and I start giving the information. You know, look, I wasn't sure if the vacuum cleaner was still going.
I think maybe Phil Wedden who told me this. He said, and maybe Chris Sharp, one of those guys, were just like, as long as you can show the goalkeepers that you care and you're bringing value to them, whether that's through daily training sessions, whether that's helping them develop a progression plan throughout the season. So if they're the number two, making sure that they know that you care. If they're the number one, making sure that the video is always ready for them. Making sure you film the training session so it's always readily accessible to them. So you're always doing extra things. So I'm trying as a coach now from an early age to have those become like non-negotiables, where I'm filming every training session, where I have video for the goalkeepers after games, where I have a training plan for the second goalkeeper who's not playing on that day. Come out 15 minutes earlier, we'll still get you work. Like, there's still, those are things that I still struggle with to be disciplined on every single like day. But those are things that I know for a fact that I want them to become established in my repertoire as a coach, so that I can be patient with myself. If one of those tools that I'm going to is not working on the day, I know I have different things that I can provide a value.
You know, it's interesting, Omar, because, you know, the situation that you're in is very fascinating, because you're technically a first team coach, but it's theoretically a developmental team. It's a reserve team for another first team. Does that make your job more of a developmental academy coach, really, than a, well, like Tom's in right now at Notts, even though he has developmental goalkeepers from other clubs?
Yeah, I would say so. I still think that, fortunately, I'm glad that I'm in this position, because you need to work off experience if you do get to a first team level. So I think that I'm happy that I'm in this position now, where I know what to fine tune in these younger goalkeepers, so that when they do get to the next level, they are ready for that opportunity. So if I do ever get a first team role, I can eyeball through scouting which goalkeepers have had these experiences through coaches like myself, and are prepared and ready to step into this first team environment to be the number one, where, you know, money and things are invested into them. So in my opinion, I think I'm, again, if I'm reverse engineering my own career, I'm training my eye to see the things that are crucial to get points on the weekend at these younger ages, so that I don't let anything slip when in scouting of those goalkeepers that we need at the first team level at some point in the future.
Yeah, I think you've put a really good ribbon on that.
I know. Sometimes, I mean, any opportunity you get in coaching, and I'm sure Tom and other coaches who have all been through the wire of coaching, you have to sometimes put a good spin on things and then realize that, like, the opportunity that you're in now may not financially be the most stable income. Or your team's not doing amazing.
You did go to a dealership to get your wheels, so I don't know.
you work to get to these points, right? You work to get, you know, a four switch tire from a dealership. But I think, again, it's like you figure out too, in that road, wherever you are, the only thing you can really control is your personal growth. And like I said right now, non-negotiables for yourself to realize, okay, for your session plans, are those session plans going to be available to the players so that they have an understanding of what you're trying to get out of them? Well, if you're doing it on like the last 10 minutes before training, then probably not. But it's like, again, it's those things of like at every level that you go to, no matter the compensation, if your macro understanding of where you want to be in 5-10 years, you need to implement those things now. And then so when you get to that level, like I said earlier, you have all these different things to fall back on and say, on your worst days, I know that I'm quality because I bring this, 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 and this.
I love it, man. Tom, I think it's almost 10 o'clock, 10:30 at night for Tom. He's probably got to wake up soon. while we're kind of wrapping up right here, Tom, do you have any advice for any coaches that have just left the youth environment and gone into a first team for first time?
In terms of your core values and your principles and what you were doing at any level that you were coaching, I don't think that they change. I think a lot of the conversations we've had tonight have been about how to deal with human beings. And as well, you know, first, and then goalkeeper second. And to be honest, a lot of those things don't change in terms of the environment that you work in. So, listen, there's lots of changes between the two roles that I've, my current role I've had now and my previous role. There's loads of changes, you know, most notably probably the pressure that's under the result each week now is far more substantial to what it was before. But in terms of, you know, if you are making that step up to a senior role, I would say the things that are important are the things that are probably important within any role within coaching, in terms of your ability to be genuine, the ability to build trust, the ability to kind of stand behind your beliefs and work hard. And as Omar said, kind of be of value, you know, no matter what you do on a day-to-day basis, be of value. And I think that if you do those things right, whether that be at a senior level or a junior level, people, staff, players buy into you, and then you end up doing, you know, the primary focus of the job, which is to make people better. Because then once you've done those things, you can then impart your knowledge that's got you into the role and hopefully improve people and players. So I would definitely say that, you know, I certainly hope I haven't got carried away with from being from the academy to the first team environment, that you kind of have to snap your authority over things, and you have to change everything, and you have to either be like the there before, or, you know, you're hired to be you. That's why you're there, is that they want you and your skills. So be true. And so it was interesting when we kind of talked about this topic that I was trying to really scratch my head as to what things are massively different. And there's a lot of things that are different between working in academy football and working in first team. But I think the thing to probably remember as much as possible is, like I say, treat, you know, we're working with human beings, whether they be 13 years old or 30 years old, and stick behind the principles that enable those people to trust, learn, and develop.
I think that's a wonderful way just to honestly end the podcast. I think that was, you really, really, really made it succinct right there, man. I mean, I think, you know, when we talk about the different environments and everything like that, I think that's lost. I think a lot of times it's just that you're working with human beings at different stages of development in their lives, not just on the pitch, but in their lives. And again, some 20-year-olds had different life experiences and others have had others. And so just find out what these human beings, whoever they're 8 years old, 19 years old, 39 years old, 59 years old, what they're going through, what they've seen, where they are in their lives, and what they need out of you in order to keep improving their lives on and off the pitch. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. Omar, anything you want to add on to that, or should we should start the dismount here?
My only tip for any young coaches that are maybe they feel a little bit intimidated working for the, you know, working with these more established goalkeepers when they step up to the next level is, for me, when you feel like you don't know something, make it a question for everybody and a collaborative effort. Because I think it was Anthony White one time said, if you give the players the opportunity to think for themselves, they may be able to come up with a solution better than we can describe it to them. And I think whenever I coach these other, you know, higher level players, if I sometimes may not have the answer or I'm not so confident in what I'm about to say, I say, this is how I see it. How do you see it? And then, you know, again, you have the freedom to express how you feel and how you see things. And then they can go, oh, wow, one, he's giving me the opportunity to speak on this, so I'm going to express it. And two, you can actually get to see, like, do they think about the position as much as they should at the level that they're at? And a lot of times for me, I've noticed that the answer is yes. Like, these guys are like diehard goalkeepers who really love to dissect the position. And I think that within itself gives you a really good scope of who you're dealing with.
Awesome, man. Well, Tom, if anybody wants to reach out to you, where's the best place for them to connect with you?
Yeah, Twitter would be the best place. That's probably where I'm the most active. So Wheely 23, WEALY23 is the best place to get me. So yeah, always open to chats, conversation, challenge, critique. So yeah, anyone ever interested in a conversation or a chat, then catch me on there.
Cool. Guys, remember, guys, if you have a guest suggestion or a topic suggestion, contact at InsideThe18Media.com or at Goalkeeper Podcast with those suggestions, guys. Also, guys, make sure that you're checking out all the content that Omar Zini is doing for Pro GK Academy at ProGKAcademy_ on Instagram. But also, a lot of those conversations are now being linked over to the Union Sports Community, guys, where you can check out all those training sessions. And there's even some really cool Union official stuff that that Omar might be helping out with behind the scenes. Maybe like Tom Wheels mic'd session.
No, we put your session on the platform, and you know, again, I saw a ton of value in it, and it's on one of our home carousels. So anybody who's coming on the app, they see it and they get to watch it. And again, learn as much as they can from your language and how you coach. Yeah.
Class.
And remember, guys, if you want to reach out to me directly, at Michael Magid or michaelmagidcomedy.com. I'm in San Diego tomorrow, February 16th. What day is today? The 15th? Today's what day is today? 17th. So I'm there February 17th, 18th, and 19th. I'll be headlining out there. So michaelmagidcomedy.com if you want to check that out. March 13th, I'm also in Oceanside, California, headlining as well because I'm big time because of Inside the 18th. So thank you for all the insiders that have come out and bought tickets because that's the only way that I get to headline is if they say, do you have a fan base? I go, I have a soccer podcast. They're like, so at least four people will come. That's good. All right, guys, on that note, that's all the time on Inside the 18, and we are out. Later, guys.